Koto, and welcome to another exciting episode of Kick-Ass, Tamaki Makaurau's comprehensive art show, brought to you every Sunday night here at Planet FM 104.6. I always forget. I just can't do it sometimes.
Shaking it up a bit.
Shaking it up. 104.6 FM and planetaudio.org.nz. Thanks, Georgia, for saving me there.
It was good. I liked it.
You like that? It's a bit of a different introduction. So
yeah.
On this Labour weekend. And what an appropriate weekend. Labour weekend.
Yeah. Sorry? No, I don't understand.
Yeah. Thanks, Jay.
I don't get it.
Jay the reviewer, thanks. Well, actually, Jay, just in case you missed the news, on Thursday night, Winston Peters decided to support a Labour-led government, which, from an arts point of view, is quite exciting because 3 weeks ago we had, in the studio, we had Tracy Martin from New Zealand First. We had Mika from Top. We had Barry Coates from the Greens, and we had from the Labour Party, oh my God, I've forgotten her name.
Someone
from the Labour Party, and they all talked very much about a shared idea about the arts and how important it was and the fact it wasn't being supported, should be supported in schools, blah, blah, blah. And lo and behold, we suddenly find ourselves with a Labour-Green New Zealand First government.
I don't know why everyone was so surprised, to be honest.
Well, I kind of was, because people don't understand MMP in this country just yet. They just don't get that you don't have to have the most seats to form a government. You just have to have the most seats.
And there was that wonderful pie explanation.
Wasn't that great?
That Chloe Swarbrick. I don't know who came up with that.
It's been going
Ava
around
Allen.
About... Hmm?
Who was it? Yes. To Ava Allen.
That's right. Ava Allen, that's
that
right.
Chloe shared it, yeah.
Yeah.
Great post. Mince and cheese pie.
Yeah,
Bill's got no friends.
Yeah. Wasn't it a great?
That's what I took away from it.
Wasn't it fantastic though?
That's great.
Yeah, and actually, I went out and bought a pie to celebrate. Didn't have enough money. Asked some people in the bakery to help me out. They were National Party voters. It didn't work. So yeah, and David Seymour was there complaining about government. David who? Right. Welcome to Kick-Arts. Georgia. Welcome back, co-host. We had a great week date. Didn't we think?
Yeah.
We're going to talk about that.
Yeah. On Friday, I was lucky because your wife was sick and couldn't go with you to the show that I really wanted to go to. So yeah. I got to go.
I know. It was fantastic.
It was great.
It was a good night. So we'll talk about that a bit later.
Yes.
And then we've got Jay in the studio who's busily texting, Facebooking, Instagramming.
I'm not doing research. Oh, research. Just like you said, if you see me looking at my phone, what am I doing?
Research.
Thank you. Okay. Yes, hello.
And so you're reviewing for us tonight.
Finding Temeraire, yes.
Okay. And it was on at the base. Is on at the basement theater?
It's finishing tonight, I think.
Oh, is it?
Last night.
Oh, no.
Okay.
Oh, no. And
it's always the way.
It's always.
You can't review things in advance, can you? You know.
Why not?
if they arrange special Kick-Arts previews, then, you know, we're in.
Well, I think it's really important that they think about doing that because, I mean, seasons are so short. It's really hard to get reviews out of them because we're on once a week. It's really hard to, you know, support stuff.
A lot of small shows only last the 1 week.
That's right.
They do. Yeah. And that's actually, I think, a symptom of the lack of good funding for and support for the arts in Auckland, but that's another conversation we can have in the next 90 minutes. Julie and Nicole, welcome. The treetops.
The mountaintops.
God, I knew I was going to do that.
We're going bigger than treetops.
And we're a two-week season, so.
Oh, that's fantastic.
At the Basement.
At the Basement Theatre. And that's a play, Martin Luther King, his last night. Yeah?
Yeah. Fictional account of his last night alive.
Fictional.
What happened in that motel room. Yeah. So it's based in the motel room. In the Lorraine Motel, which is the motel
where he was shot.
He was assassinated.
On the balcony.
On the balcony.
God, that was a decade of assassinations, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. Of good people. Mm. Good people.
That's right.
Yes. So that's must be. And you play the part of a maid.
I do.
Yeah.
Of the motel maid.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm not playing Coretta Scott King. Everyone thought I was playing. Because Dave Fanno is playing Martin Luther King.
Yeah.
And everyone thought I was playing his wife. But I'm not.
No, you're playing the maid.
I'm playing the maid.
I read the publicity. I know.
Great.
So
you read the page.
Shh, don't say too much. Oh, is it a secret?
I can't tell you too much about it. Something.
It was in the press release.
Oh, that I'm a maid. Oh, yes. No. Yes. Yeah, that's not a secret.
Oh, okay. Now suddenly,
she's just not your ordinary old maid. That's all.
Richard felt he was blowing the whole plot. It's very embarrassing when that happens, isn't it? Sixth Sense.
Why are you looking at her?
Oh, just because she
could. She's done that before.
No, yeah. The Sixth Sense. Do you remember The Sixth Sense,
yes,
the movie?
Mm.
I'm the guy in the theatre who went, oh! Just at the moment when people went, oh, thanks.
Can I just say, Richard, all these meaningful looks at different members of the panel here, great radio.
Yeah,
it is.
I realise I
did
not
it. Yeah. Yeah. It makes great radio, thanks. But that camera up there, you see the camera?
Oh, yeah.
It's live streaming out everything.
Oh, really?
So,
oh,
no, it's not. So it's not.
No,
it's not. Sorry about that, because actually you probably thought it was, and people probably think that's really good radio with a live stream. But people come in here with onesies and stuff because it's a Sunday night.
Yes.
And Labour Weekend, and thank you very much for coming in on a Sunday night. So, cabaret.
Yeah, it's
Erin and Jen.
Hello.
Hello, hello.
Hello. Yeah, Love Me Tinder. It's kind of like a musical rap.
I love that. Love Me Tinder.
It's rap and musical.
Yeah, on the score I put it as modern operetta. It sort of crosses a lot of... it was a very eclectic piece. It crosses a lot of genres throughout it. There's rap, there's... musical numbers, there's recitative, which is from an operatic device, there's a lot of rap.
Yes.
Have I missed anything?
Is there rap?
Swearing.
There is.
Rap.
Oh, swearing and rap. Well, they kind of go
yes.
hand in hand, don't they? They kind of go hand in hand. What an exciting... I just love the title, Love Me Tinder, because it is the way of
it's
the
catchy,
future,
isn't it?
And
it's 2017.
Well, you look at people who... How did you meet your partner? On online... And, you know, 15 years ago, if you met your partner online, you were really friggin' sad. Nowadays, it's kind of common, actually.
Mm,
it is. So, yeah.
No chaperones anymore or anything. It's really changed, hasn't it?
No, there's just filters. Yeah, you filter through. Modern chaperone is a filter.
Yeah.
So I want this person who looks like this, who does this, who does this. That's your chaperone.
And then you turn up and they don't look like that.
No.
And they're married with 15 children.
That's right.
With a house in Seattle to yourself. So, Georgia, your date stories, which are always famous on Kick-Arts, have you been on Tinder?
That's how the date story started.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, when I started reviewing before I was co-hosting, maybe this is what actually got me the job. Tinder. So I got single and I just started dating hard because I was like, I've got these tickets to come see things with me.
And you need
stories. And it was a good filter as well. Yeah, like because there was some, you know, like for instance, once I went to a comedy show. It was the basement opening show, so they had all of these comedians coming in and just doing like 5 minute sets, and it was really good because the guy that I was with, I remember like he was not laughing at some of the things I was laughing at, and then really laughing at some of the things I was saying. Ugh. It was good.
Because you could leave there and go, oh no, pay for your own drinks.
Yeah, so Tinder and theatre.
Tinder
my
and theatre.
My experience, 10 out of 10 works well.
So where did that come from, the idea of Tinder and theatre? Did somebody just say at a party, hey, love me Tinder, hey, Elvis?
I can't say exactly where the term was coined from, other than I imagine our director, Stephen Sinclair, came up with the title, because I've always just known it as that when it was sort of pitched to me. But the idea came sort of collectively from him and... the owner of Freedom Argalos, which is a pub in Grey Lynn. His name's Howie. He had sort of wanted to encourage more musical stuff in his pub, basically, and had suggested the idea of a sort of more classical opera-based show within the pub. And so it sort of started from that and then turned into a script and turned into a short musical. And then we ran it last year, but it's now been revised and extended by a few scenes and with all original music by myself. So it's,
I was just going to say, you're the composer.
Yeah, that's correct, yeah.
So getting involved with that, your background in composition.
Yeah, so I graduated of Auckland University. I finished there a couple of years ago, but I've been writing music for about probably 10 or 11 years now. And I quickly realised that going into higher education, it was either that or more or less nothing. It was probably my biggest strength. And I started out doing just small theatre things in places like the Pump House with little acting, just doing jobs for friends, really. And in the end,
that's how it goes in the arts, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, Rich, what are you doing this weekend? Nothing. I need an actor for a play.
Exactly.
You've got 2 days to learn the script.
Yeah. Yeah, no, exactly. The first handful of things were all just sort of freebie help out your mate kind of deals. And then I knew Amy Jansen, who was our original leading actress in Love Me Tender last year, and she had suggested me to Stephen as to do the music for last year's production. And it just sort of went from there, really.
And there's some rap in it, is there?
There is.
just asking.
No, so we've got a local artist, Mel Bailey, who's an up-and-coming rapper within the area. And he's one of the actors in the show. It's a very small cast. There's only Jen, Stephen Lunt, and Mel Bailey. It's only the three people plus me on stage.
Not many dating options.
No.
Just relative to Tinder.
That's it.
You've only can swipe twice, really, can't you?
It's Auckland.
But as you'll see in the show, we make something of it, though. We bring everyone in, don't we?
No,
one's really safe in the audience with the show.
No,
so
interactive.
Yeah, not to give anything away, but
Get ready. Audience participation.
We love it.
Nicole, you're shaking
your
head.
I'm not a big fan. I'm just a bit of it, but well.
No, I don't think our fans will be either, but
it's funny, right? Like loving being an actor and loving getting up and love my craft and doing all that, but hate it if anyone picks me from the audience. Although I was picked by Boney M to get up and dance, and to
Brown
Film the Ring, which was my song as a baby in Fiji, in the middle of the Carver Circle, dancing Brown Girl the Ring. Yep, and they picked me at 15 years old to get up at the Auckland Town Hall and sing that song, and I forgot the words. Because I was like, oh my god, Boney M.
So what is it about, so you're an actor, and which you can't afford to be too shy, but about audience participation, what is it about that doesn't work for you then?
I don't know what it is. I think it's that I still have that, and I need to get over it. Now that I'm 40, I need to get over it. I still have that thing where I don't have that American actor vibe where they can just really sell themselves on... On all, do you know what I'm saying?
I have
that
do.
New Zealand, that I still have that
as
whole
American,
part of it.
I'm American, so I feel like
I can get up and perform as a character, but when it's myself, and yet I can MC stuff, but even then I kind of put on a character. But as soon as someone asks me to go up in the audience, all of a sudden I go back to being that little girl at school that just, don't look at me.
You're the same, Jenna.
Sometimes I get really shy. Like, I don't like talking about myself. Like, oh, guys, like, watch me do something now. You know? It's like, oh, you want to have it in the proper show, or you don't want to be that person at the party, like, watch me do a monologue. Like, who wants that?
I've just found doing monologues at parties really doesn't happen. Well.
I've never seen it.
I'm going to do
would be your monologue,
Hamlet.
Richard, if you had to, because you've thought about it, haven't you? What is your monologue? If you, Hamlet?
To be or not to be.
To be or not to be.
Seriously. That would be it.
Why?
I know it all the way through.
That's, is that why it would be your monologue?
Yeah, only because I'd be confident delivering. That's the only thing. So otherwise I wouldn't do it. I'd have to know I could do it. It's a thing.
Yeah.
You got to know that you can deliver.
So everybody should have one monologue,
I reckon,
in their back pocket.
Probably two.
Oh, I've got one. I could do that part from, The Notebook? The film. You know, where he's like... Can you just stay with me? You know?
No, I didn't see
Ryan Gosling.
Are you playing Ryan Gosling?
I'll be Ryan Gosling. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's cool.
It's really good.
Should I see the film?
Yes.
Yes, yeah.
100%.
Is it good? To be honest, that's the climax of it.
Oh, my God. So again, Sixth Sense. All over. No need to see it.
To be honest, I think I probably do that at parties. I've got one rap that I know, once I've had two or three drinks, I make people listen to me do it, and that involves them listening to the whole first part of the song and then me doing the rap on top of the song. It's not good.
But when you're in Fiji, did you miss out on doing this song?
It's Boney M. It's my song, guys. It's my song. Song. I've lost my voice for karaoke. You can sing it for me. You're the singer, aren't you?
Yeah, I don't know it though.
You don't know it.
Oh my gosh.
You don't know Boney M.
I know.
That young? Maybe?
I'm American. Does that count?
Well, they are German. Jamaican. Oh, English.
English.
Oh, yeah, German. We don't get any of that.
Did you hear that the guy from Boney M, he lip-synced? My dad told me that. Apparently, he was just in it for the look. Yeah. They just thought his look was good.
That's right.
Not unlike Lee Vanilli.
Was the guy that was actually singing the male part. They just got a pretty boy in to do
that. Isn't that ridiculous?
No.
He's like the most ridiculous looking person in the whole world.
Is this tied up with Milli Vanilli? Were they German too?
Yes, they were.
I feel like this is a thing that they do.
Yeah, the Germans,
eh? Until you get caught.
Right. Is anyone here German? Oh, yes, I am. Okay, seriously. That's right, people. Just carry on with that conversation. Let's get back on track with the shows that we're talking about here, shall we? So, the mountaintops, not the treetops, I apologise.
Yeah.
I read the title several times, I went through the press release and went, treetops.
Treetops, that's the one.
Well, I can't do that. So, you're producing this, Julie?
Yes.
Yeah? So, how did you get involved with this project?
Nicole's actually been doing a really great job of producing it, pretty much. And they brought me on to help support the production. Yeah, I remember when we first met, actually, to talk about the project at the basement.
Do you remember what happened?
It was the night Materia resigned. And then I had to go to the bathroom.
Because I was on my phone.
I had to be excused.
The Materia
and
had
the moment, and then come
the Greens, because Julie is a Green MP, as well
not
as
not a Green MP. Anyways.
Yet.
I kind of think it's all linked. It's all linked. Producing this show, I think it kind of is in line with all the other work I've produced this year around social justice or inequality and fighting for civil rights and that sort of thing. Mm. So, a lot of the things that are in the show to do with all the racism and all the issues that black people faced in the 60s, I think that's really relevant to New Zealand and all the issues that people
but we have the best race relations in the world.
Don't we just?
We do, of course. Damn that tiger.
Oh, Duncan Garner.
Downer, eh?
Duncan Garner, eh? What's with that?
Or the new Mike Hoskins, as he's been called.
I know. Well, seriously, I can't even believe that commentary came out of his mouth, or anyone's mouth. But, yes, anyway. So that was it's really so your motivation around projects is a bit of social justice. Is that is that it?
Or? Kind of. I think I'm mostly
not. Is that it? Like,
I think it's really important that art can have a social impact. So that's the kind of projects that I'm really interested in being involved in, because I think art and storytelling it's super powerful, and that's how you can actually impact how people think. I think it's much harder to kind of preach at people that this way of thinking is wrong. But if you show them through art, then, I think it makes a much bigger, longer-lasting difference.
Would the rest of you agree with that?
I would, absolutely.
100%.
Yeah. Mm.
Although I'm biased because as a musician, I always say music's also the next most important thing to help enhance the written stuff, when you look at film and music. But absolutely. Without the story, it's very much nothing there. So.
And so what gets shut down when there's a revolution? Or a clampdown?
Music?
Music and theatre and poetry.
Expression, that sort of free expression for...
That's a really cool one.
So considering people think that artists are airy-fairy generally and, don't have a real job and all those kind of things we hear all the time, why are the arts so powerful? Why do governments feel in situations like that they have to shut them down? I'd be interested to hear what your thoughts are on that. Sorry, it's a bit deep for a Sunday, but
not at all.
But why are the arts so dangerous? Why are they so powerful?
In ways it can be a subtle influence, especially if it's, say, political comedians are more direct, but if you've got music that can be made to mock or to inspire, then it can suddenly start twisting, events out of control. As a sort of history buff, always followed the and read up on all the stuff within the USSR with the late Romantic composers, and they always thoroughly enjoyed taking jabs at the Soviet leaders, just through the music, sort of making things to mock Stalin musically, and so it's that subtle power that it has, whether it's direct or not direct. I couldn't say for the theatre, but I imagine it'd be the same kind of thing.
Wonder what kind of music's going on in North Korea at the moment. See, in America, we can see that. I mean, Donald Trump's just got himself open for a lot of mocking from comedians. It's open game on him. But
I think art also thrives when there is that thing to react against, when there is oppression. That's when art thrives and grows. Mm. And I think art is also more accessible in that way, and that you don't need a whole lot of wealth. And that's where it comes from, the grassroots, and you can build that up.
Mm.
And that becomes the power when everyone can access that.
Yeah. And so the play The Mountaintops is very much about that, the power of someone like Martin Luther King, who was incredibly powerful. You can nod, it's okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's okay.
We can nod.
Yeah, so the Mountaintop, actually, the title comes from Martin Luther King's last speech, which was, "I've been to the mountaintop," or as it's known now, which he made the day before he was assassinated. And it's really interesting, that speech, because it almost foreshadows that he feels that he's not going to be around for very long.
He says in the speech,
"Yeah, mm-hmm.
I may not make it. I may not live a. I'd love to live a long life.
I probably won't get there with you,
but I probably won't. But I'm okay with that."
But he sees
the promised land.
He sees a brighter future. He sees that the revolution is going to come, and there will be liberation for black people, which in a way he was right and wrong in that it sort of happened, but it's still not.
And it wasn't even just about black people at that point, because as we know, he started getting into, you know, he started talking about the Vietnam War, and I mean, a big part of the Mountaintop speech, he was actually at the Mason Temple doing that speech in Memphis. It was around the rights of the sanitation workers. So he started looking at, you know, who were the people that were in poverty, no matter what colour they were, and he was going in and fighting for that, which really kind of, they talk a lot about in the play, that it really split the movement, because people were going, well, why are you going off and doing these other things? You're a civil rights leader. You should be focusing on this and that. Whether as he was quite something, wasn't it?
Well, the civil rights were about anyone's civil rights, really.
Well, of course, that was the point. But there were a lot of people going, you should be focusing on black civil rights. That's what it was about.
I think that's the same criticism that you get in movements here in New Zealand as well, like with the Greens, being criticised for only focusing or for focusing on social issues, not environmental issues, when everything is interlinked. And the impression that comes from one is also what.
You can't separate the two of them, can you?
No. We had that with a play I was involved in recently doing some music for. It was called Boy Afraid, and it was done at the Albion. It was only done for a week, one of those famous week-long shows that we were talking about. But, I mean, that focus was on sort of the toxic masculinity in that, and, of course, the immediate criticisms was, you know, we need more women in the thing. And we said, well, we're not trying to exclude them, but, we're looking at a certain topic. But we actually did have monologues within the show of a predominantly female cast, you know, giving the perspective of the man's side of things. And so it was interesting, you know, in relation to what you're saying. It's, you know, actually about, you know, very relevant here in New Zealand, where we try and look at everything rather than just one thing or another. And, yeah, you know, that was our experience during that little production, trying to get a balance in your show, you know, that shows both sides of the things,
Yeah, sometimes I'm just not even to both sides. I just want the one good side, actually. Sometimes you just need to leave the other side out. And saying that, you're from America.
I am.
So can I ask, I'm sorry to ask you this.
No, go ahead.
But I'm just thinking about, you know, what's his name?
Dave.
I can't swear, can I, at this
Orange?
Time? Trump.
Colour?
Orange.
Colour orange.
Orange. Yeah. How is an American?
Yeah.
Have you been here long?
Yeah, I've been here for about 5 years. Right. 4.5, 5, but I lived in Melbourne for 2 years before that.
So you're impacted by what's going on in the United States?
Oh, yeah. My friends, my news feed on Facebook is just, it was really depressing. And people are like, I'm really depressed right now. And people take it to heart because, you know, their lives are affected by what's going on. And so it's, it's tricky because I'm here, but you still feel the effects of what's there. Because I just recently went to the States a few months ago, and it's such a heavy topic. Like, you just can't bring up anything. Or people just get fired up on both sides. And it's quite scary because people stop talking to their family members because they just are on opposite sides.
Has that happened to you?
I try not to get into politics because it's such, in the States, it's really like it's so fire. Just, you can be kicked out anywhere, so.
And in the arts community over there, what, is it divided or?
No. It's, I mean, obviously they're definitely anti-Trump. It's very, and I went to liberal arts university and everything like that, so of course.
What was it called?
The liberal arts university? Nebraska Wesleyan University, but it's a liberal arts school.
What does that mean in an American context?
Liberal. like a well-rounded, worldly education, maybe, and private school. So, yeah, it's liberal and private.
Wow.
I know.
Those two words don't go together in New Zealand, do they? Liberal and private.
It's kind of weird, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Now that I think about it, I don't get that. So, yeah, it's a hot topic. A lot of people obviously don't like Trump. But then there's some crazy like Trump lovers out there, and
Trump
I'm like
lovers,
Trump lovers,
like Ivanka.
Yeah, like they're just so gung ho about them, and I'm like, I'm surprised you openly are talking about that.
So even now, you find that people are openly supportive of Trump, irrespective of the stuff that he does.
Yeah. And it, I think it depends what region of the states you're from. Like Kentucky, you know, you're... Well, and also to the...
Kentucky. Damn.
Yeah. And then obviously if you go more New York, it's going to be very liberal.
Yeah.
So...
Although, I spent 2 years living in California, and when I went over there naively from Palmerston North, as you do, I thought that California was the liberal, you know, filmmaking capital of the world, and there was lots of... progressive thinking, liberal filmmaking people, and no, it was incredibly conservative.
Wow.
Compared to Palmerston North.
Yes, I know. Feel me, right? It was like, oh my God. And the people were incredibly backward in their views on stuff. And I found that really shocking. But I mean, you're looking at when you look at the film population of LA, you're looking at a small microcosm of a very large state of several million people. And I mean, Ronald Reagan was the governor, for God's sakes. You know, at one point, you know, bedtime for Bonzo, all that sort of stuff. Speaking of film, Gina, welcome. Show Me Shorts.
Hello. Sorry I'm late to the party.
That's all right. You haven't missed anything at all.
Right.
Apart from half an hour, but that's okay. It's all good.
Bit of political discussion.
We're talking about that. We are having a bit of political discussion. There's been an election. Did you know that?
I am aware, yes.
Yes, yeah.
I was just talking to some friends today about how crap New Zealanders are at talking about politics and how, like... We kind of are discouraged from talking about it, like it's not polite.
Yes.
And that means we kind of don't have the vocabulary for speaking about it with people without kind of getting into a fight or getting kind of emotional about it.
Oh, I hear you.
So we kind of need to encourage each other to do it a bit more so that we get used to it, because it's pretty important.
And when you find on things on social media, when you start talking about politics, people are like, oh, whoa. Calm the farm.
Yeah.
Let's not talk about it. Just vote quietly and don't tell anyone.
Yeah, but it's really important.
It is important, especially for the arts community, I think, because we're the forgotten cousin, I think, a lot of times. You know, all the policy stuff, you know, stuff like housing and poverty and clean waters, they get all the attention. What about the arts? Really?
It's true. You can't have a healthy society without the arts.
That's a very serious point. We can't, can we? Because if you think, if we took away all the stuff that we do here in this room, or you do in this room, then what would be left?
Didn't Churchill have a nice quote on that? If you take away all the funding from the arts, what's the point of fighting?
It's been attributed to him, but actually he never really said it.
Right.
It's one of those things on Facebook that's, you know, don't believe everything you read on Facebook, Abraham Lincoln. It's one of those kind of quotes. But he said something similar to that. A very good, you know, he said he was a big lover of the arts.
He also said putting a preposition at the end of a sentence is something up with which we should not put.
Wow, Jay, you're informed this evening, aren't you?
Wow,
nice.
Yeah. I'm wondering if we should go to your review now because of that.
We think I'm warming up.
Shall we have a vote, people? Review?
I'm
impressed. Okay. Let's do it. I'm going
to swizzle
the microphone.
Swizzle it.
Some interesting Blade Runner-esque noises probably when I do that. I know. It's all right. Look, it's been oiled.
I know.
Fantastic.
Like Blade Runner.
By the way, Blade Runner 2049. Just seen it. Anybody not seen it? With no spoilers, I promise. Okay, except that it's bloody good and you ought to go and see it. Okay, there you go. Aaron agrees.
No, good. No? I've heard the same. I've got a lot of film friends who think very highly of it.
I wasn't so keen on the first one.
I, well, in that case, don't go and see it.
The
Oh, really?
You're on the outside, as far as I'm concerned.
Always, Jay,
yeah,
always.
Absolutely. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So, Finding Temuairi, Basement, I went to see it on Tuesday evening, and it finished, I think Julie just said it finished last night, so as is so often the case, you cannot go and see this anymore. Written by a Zimbabwean playwright who lives now in New Zealand, and I have, to my shame, forgotten the gentleman's name. Stanley Makuwe, yes, absolutely. And look, it's a bit of a shame, really. The blurb for the play kind of gives too much away. Because it's actually a kind of, in some ways, a claustrophobic little play, but it's got so many emotional twists and turns, and some of the things that you will read in the blurb for the play, you really don't want to know before you go and see it. Luckily, I didn't, because I was offered this review ticket fairly late. I just dived straight in and didn't really know anything what to expect. The setup is a woman who has come back from somewhere, we don't really know where in the play, to this almost abandoned mining town and stumbles across who seems to be the caretaker of what's left of it. And obviously she remembers him, but he doesn't remember her. And that's how it starts. And it almost sets itself up to be a romantic comedy as she reminds him of the great night out they had the last time they met. But then it turns into a tragedy. And it is that, really, that emotional progression from setting us up for a sort of reunited and it feels so good.
80s.
Absolutely. And in the end, we go through sort of hope, disappointment, and then ending up with grief. And a real Greek sense in it. It's a horrible story in some ways. But it makes you think, well, why the hell should you go and see it then? But just because it's such a nice, not nice in a pretty kitten way, but it's such a nicely crafted play. So Stanley Makuwe is definitely a great playwright. I don't know anything else that he's done. And it's just two actors, cast of two, really just a cast of one, because one of the actors hardly has any speaking, although that's unfair. He's not a prop. The expressions on his faces are essential to the development of the play. And so that is Temuairi, as in Finding Temuairi. And then we have Primrose, the lady who rediscovers Temuairi, and we learn very early on in the play, and it's in the blurb, so I'm not really spoiling here, that she's just come back from 20 years in prison to rediscover this gentleman and have something out with him, basically. I don't want to tell you anymore, in case it comes back.
Mm-hmm. Well, it may do, because often these plays get development and then come back again for another season.
Very sparse set, just a big cross in the background which changes colour as you go through, I think, sort of being the moral focus, just to remind you that this is a morality play, and it goes from being dialogue to monologue to storytelling. I was lucky enough that I obviously had a bunch of Zimbabweans sitting behind me talking about how what the actor was doing was using traditional African narration techniques, talking to the audience. So she'd rip up the fourth wall occasionally and speak directly to us and then teleport herself back into the play and to talk to the other character. Wow. So I think it was about an hour or maybe just over, and I was hooked, definitely. I think there were people at the Basement I was not used to seeing. I suspect the entire Zimbabwean population of Auckland had turned out for this play.
Great.
But it was great. And if it does come back, I thoroughly recommend it.
And it's wonderful that we can get more diversity into theatre.
Oh, yeah.
Offering opportunities. And I think that's what's lacking often in Auckland theatre.
Yeah, have I seen a African written and directed play with African actors at the Basement before?
I haven't in the last 5 years.
Julie, have you?
No.
There you are, so yeah.
I know that Silo did a play with a couple of African actors. A play that, that lovely actor Matt Whelan, who's in Narcos, he played and was set in France. See that one?
And there were two Sophie Henderson in it as well. Okay.
Yes. But I've never seen.
I can't remember.
What do you think about diversity in Auckland theatre? And film. And music.
We have trouble getting films from Africa for our program for Show Me Shorts. We've done a big focus on Asia lately, and we've been sourcing lots more films from that part of the world. So we've got quite a few films from Korea and China in the program this year. But definitely it's difficult to connect with people to kind of build those relationships to bring them out. It must be similar in theatre, but because you kind of need to build relationships and find out what are the great new plays that are coming out of there, and then I guess you definitely want actors that are from that part of the world if you can. So, like, is there a big population of African people in Auckland? I'm not sure.
I think there's quite a large Somalian population in Mount Albert.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So
my next door neighbours are Somalian. In fact. Yeah. Absolutely.
So how do you choose? How do you
making theatre?
How do you choose the films for Show Me Shorts? So do you put a call out? Is it like any other short film festival in the world?
It's
you put
like,
a call out internationally, or
it's
is it
like any film festival in the world? There are a few big online platforms that people enter through. So there's one we use called WithoutAbox.com, and the other one's called FilmFreeway.com. So people will log in there and put all the details of their film, and then they just look up what film festivals they want to enter, whether they want to focus on certain countries or certain tiers, ones that are Oscar qualified like ours, or
That's exciting, isn't it? You're Oscar qualified. That's been a couple of years now, eh?
Yeah, it's been a few years since 2012. Yeah. So this is the fifth year that we'll be getting Oscar accreditation for the top New Zealand film and the top international film as well. So two of the films that, the last 2 years, the films that have won the Best Live Action Oscar Award have been films that have played in our festival.
Wow.
So that's pretty exciting.
Wow. Yeah.
And we haven't had any New Zealanders go forward to qualify and to become finalists for the Oscars yet, but I think it's only a matter of time.
Yeah, that's a shame. It's a shame.
It'll happen. It will. At least now they've got the opportunity.
So do you have obviously more submissions than you can take? Who gets to choose the films?
As the festival director and programmer, it's ultimately my decision. But I've got a team of about 8 people, and we all watch the films, and there's lots of arguments and talking about them. And I try and listen to the team, because the point of having a whole team is that you get lots of opinions and diversity in terms of those voices, and everyone has a few favourites that they'll fight for. And we get about 2,000 entries, and we can only fit about 50 films in the program.
Oh my god,
it's a very slim number.
Do you invite mates over for say, hey, come to my house and have a glass of wine and watch a film or 74?
Yeah, everyone thinks it's a good idea. They're like, oh, I'll watch films with you, but they don't realise that when it gets to close to festival time, I'm watching 100 films a week and then 50 a day for like.
Do they merge? You know, do you go, oh, I just saw this film and it's no, that was the other film. No, I just can't separate them.
There was the Death Star and there was a Hobbit.
And she played the guitar on the street in Paris with Luke Skywalker.
There's definitely common themes, and those emerge. And when we program them, we kind of use those themes that come out. So that's how we just how we arrange them in the program. So we have 7 different themed sessions in the program, and we don't decide those themes until we've selected all the best films.
Oh, yeah.
So those are kind of cool. This year there's ones around, one's called Made to Move, which is around lots of movement. There's sort of some action films and some dance films and some kind of sports related films.
And the time frame, so a short film by definition is under 60 minutes or under 70 minutes?
International standard for short films.
All the short films I've done have been 5 minutes, but that's with 48 hours, so those are strictly.
But I've seen a short film that was 60 minutes.
The Oscars say 40 minutes maximum. For Show Me Shorts Film Festival, it's 20 minutes maximum.
Okay.
It's kind of difficult to program films that are too different in lengths. I think the audience finds it a bit jarring to watch, say, a 40-minute film and then a 5-minute film, or we try and program ones that sort of give you a sort of a seamless experience of some kind of idea, and it's nice when they kind of timed around about the same amount.
I think short films for me are kind of about 10 to 15 minutes. That's kind of how I see a short film.
Yeah. So, I think internationally the time of them is decreasing a little bit. Yeah. It used to be average about 12 minutes, and now I think it's about closer to about 8 minutes from the ones that I've seen.
Oh, wow. It's like
attention spans are decreasing.
Is that that's the reduction in time?
Is it like theatre, though?
Get someone to look at it if it's only 8 minutes long. Yeah. If it's 10 minutes,
it is easier to program the shorter ones if you've got maybe I could fit one more film in there. If it's a bit shorter, that's easier.
Also, what about theatre because theatre shows are going from, you know, you think about the old theatre shows were 2.5 hours with an interval.
I just did Streetcar.
That was 3 hours, eh?
Yeah, well, 3 hours. Yeah, well, we just finished Sunset Boulevard at Millennium Playhouse. I'm at the musical theatre, but, you know, that's 2.5 hours.
Was it?
Musical theatre.
Absolutely.
Musical theatre. Don't get me started. I'll start on that later.
No, go for it.
So now shows seem to be around between 50 to 70 minutes.
Yeah.
No interval. Is that the norm now, do you think?
I think that's happening more and more with newer theatre, contemporary theatre, at least at the Basement, which is where I guess I associate Basement with new theatre. And yeah, most shows there around that. Sorry, most shows there around that. yeah, just from working there last year full time and seeing pretty much every show that went through, everything was around an hour. And I've kind of gotten used to that now. So yeah. When I saw Streetcar, I like couldn't make it. It was too long for me.
Yeah,
but I guess that's just a taste thing.
She didn't make it.
I didn't make it.
Wow!
Were there two or three intervals for that?
The interval was like 2 hours in.
I have to confess, I couldn't have. I mean, I've been watching theatre for many, many years, and I've been to very long shows, Shakespeare and stuff, and I need a good interval, at least within, has to be within 90 minutes if I'm going to go for another hour afterwards. It has to be a good 20 minute interval, because, you know, you've got to get up and stretch your legs.
Yeah. 90 minutes is about as long as any human can focus on something. Yeah. You've got to have a change of something at that point.
An ice cream.
Oh, I went to go see Matilda last night. Ooh. And it was, I don't know if anyone's seen it.
Yeah, it's amazing.
I want to see it.
It was so good.
Yeah.
And that was, I guess, two hours, maybe two and a bit.
Two and a bit hours, yeah.
But it didn't feel like that because you're just in it.
And I'm known to not be a fan of musical theatre, and I took my daughter to the opening week of that, and
she loved it.
She absolutely was just 9 years old, just because she read all the books. She's a big Roald Dahl fan, and I went along going, duty. I was reviewing it for the show, so I had the ticket, so I took her along, and it got to the end. I went, what? Wow, that went really and I don't normally like it, but I thought it was really engaging. I've done the review, I'm not going to do it again, but there were some aspects of it which really grated on me, but it was really enjoyable to see.
We had lots of people, mainly actors, who came and saw Streetcar, who said that they had no idea, the time just went. They were so engaged.
It's a great play.
But then I had quite a few people like Julie.
Sorry.
Who were like, look, sorry.
So sometimes we don't make it through 1 hour shows. Yeah.
And as a cast, we got used to it. Like the lead actors, Mia Blake, would say she would just notice after coming on into the second half that several of audience members had just gone. And really? She just got used to it and she understood that. That was okay.
But if you
know,
go
it's
to
not
Streetcar,
your...
if you go to a play like that, you know that it's going to be... It's a classic.
That's right.
You know, you don't... Sorry, Julie, but you know, did you go, okay, I'm in for the long haul here, unless it's a terrible production. And I'm not saying Streetcar, I didn't see it, but unless you go along to a terrible production and go... It's like a film, right? You go along to a film. It's easier to sneak out of a cinema, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Than to sneak out of live theatre.
Yeah.
Live theatre, you have to wait for the intermission.
Or try.
Not if it's bad, but I mean, it's awkward if not.
It depends on the cinema you're in, though. Like the Sky City Theatre is terrible for that. Like all the seats, your legs pretty much touching the one in front. Yeah. And if you're in the middle, you've got to climb over like 50 people.
The Civic's the same.
Yeah.
There is no aisle down the Civic. That's poor design. For people like me who get anxious in those sorts of spaces, I want to be sitting on the end.
Yeah, you're stuck in like The Hobbit and it's 3 hours and you really need to pee. For the second time, and you're like, when is it over?
Yeah. You've just summed up my whole Hobbit trilogy feeling.
Rings. Yeah.
Couldn't do it. I can't do that.
Yeah.
You know? And I'm harking back to the days when you used to go, there was 3 sessions, 2 o'clock, 5 o'clock and 8 o'clock, and there was always an intermission where the popcorn comes up on the screen and you go, yes, ice cream, pee, back in the cinema.
I think long movies and long theatre, if it's got an intermission and you're committing for the night, it's kind of a bit that big experience. Yep. But you do expect higher standards if you're in for the night. That's a big show.
Yep.
But the stuff that they're doing at the Basement, it must be less risky for the... the theatre to program those 70-minute shows, because they can do a couple in each space per night.
Yeah, yeah. So if one...
It must mean that they can get away with programming riskier productions, which is so great, because that's what that space
that's what the
does so
for,
well.
Isn't it?
Yeah. So it means, you know, if one doesn't do well, it's okay, and they can afford to...
So we went and saw the Vultures at Kew on Friday night on a kick-arts date.
Can I just say you look, both of you look so dapper.
And that,
your
and
Facebook
that photo.
Photos, yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, well, we both dressed up for the occasion, didn't we, Georgia?
It's because Richard always looks amazing whenever we go out.
Stop it.
And honestly, it's like, and normally I've like come from work or something and I'm wearing my normal like double denim and a beanie and Chuck Taylors. And then I get into the car and I look at Richard and he'll be wearing like beautiful, like, tailored dress, like tartan pants with a matching vest and like a some kind of fancy tie, and his hair's all done.
So you dressed up.
So I dressed up.
You did. And it was the occasion to dress up. I mean, the Kew Theatre's a lovely venue.
Yeah.
I was really talking about, you know, risky programming. I was disappointed by, it was Friday night, third night into the season. The house was probably maybe a third.
Because of Labour Weekend.
Yeah, it was a really low attendance, and I was surprised. Because we walked in at 7:30, and I had this, because we're going to have a glass of wine before and settle into the night, and I went, I think, maybe it started at 7 o'clock because it was so quiet.
Wow!
And you know, Kew Theatre, when there's a show on, is never quiet.
No,
we were there during the week about 6 weeks ago for the Indian Ink production, which the name has
Elephant Thief.
No, it was the...
The Pickle King. Which was just so good. Which actually, to be honest, there could probably be a few comparisons because both of them were kind of quirky, like quirky characters, and like the sets were quite interesting and the things were meant to be thought-provoking rather than...
Just narrative.
Yeah, or like, what's the word when it's like exactly the same as what you would expect it to be?
Exactly the same?
Predictable?
Yeah.
Predictable.
Well,
has anyone else seen it?
No, we're rehearsing down at the Vault at the moment, so we didn't get to see it, but we did notice that opening night, they had a huge opening night. And then a couple of nights we've come out of rehearsal and have just actually been quite flabbergasted at how little people are walking out of the theatre. And I said to someone, Amber Curran, who runs
Tipo,
because I think they're going there next, aren't they? I wondered if they would do better there. Is it to do with the venue? Like, why are they not?
See, that's the thing, is like, because a lot of the theatre that we go to is at Kew or at Basement. Basement and the upstairs, is it the
Loft?
Is my favourite venue, and I love Tipo. But I don't know, that big, was it called the Rangatira room?
And so someone from Tipo was at that night on Friday, and he thought it was in the Loft rather than Rangatira, because it was sort of... I love the set, though, because it got me thinking at the dimension of the set. It made me feel like, is the stage on a slant?
Yeah.
Or is the set on a slant?
But that could have been in a smaller room.
It could have been. Absolutely, it could have been.
Although I went into... Because I went and saw the Ballad of Maggie Flynn in the Rangatira room in Kew earlier on in the year, and that blew me away. That's my favourite piece of theatre I've seen all year, but that was just made for that space. This big stage with this very tall set, whereas that was just, it was basically just wooden,
black stage,
just like a wooden what's like a
platform.
Like a wooden platform.
It was.
And it was cool because it was meant to represent like a floor in a house, but also a jetty.
Yeah, I have to say I didn't get it. I've been struggling in the last couple of days about understanding what the point was of the play.
And
I heard so many good things about it, and I left there going, I'm not sure. Did I miss something?
Yeah.
About it.
Yeah.
Oh, Judy's keeping. Did you go and see it?
Oh well, I kind of felt the same.
Yeah. Yeah, oh, okay.
I didn't want to say because it sounds like I hate all theatre.
No. And we had that conversation afterwards, and I went, I'm just not sure what the point was.
Yeah.
And I struggled with that, and actually, I dreamed about it that night. On Friday night, I woke up and went, I'm dreaming about the damn play, because my mind was really playing with what was the point. Mm. I got the idea about land grabbing and within a hapu, people ripping people off, and the conflicts within family, and all those sorts of things. But I couldn't.
And the ideas around the water, really the spoke water, to
and
me as well,
and spirituality and history and But I couldn't. It didn't come together for me as an idea. Did you?
Well, I was kind of the same, and I felt like I had missed some context going in. Maybe didn't read that blurb that explained everything. So I went and read the interview on the spin-off with Leonie Hayden, and I guess the point is to just show that Māori stories can be very different, and that's not a traditional Māori story that you expect to see, because it's portraying very wealthy, upper-class Māori, which is a story you never see. So I guess that in itself is kind of a point, which is worthy in itself, and I think generally it just wasn't really a play for me, but it doesn't mean it's not a play for other people.
I found the characters, one of the characters, to be very, very
funny,
very Pākehā.
And Nicola Carwin's character?
Yeah, but also within that, almost too over the top, out of context with the other characters that were quite real. And it was like having a pantomime character with a naturalistic character.
Well, so it felt like the elder characters were kind of more caricatures, but the younger characters were more real and grounded. So yeah, that was kind of
But I found that irritating. And don't get me wrong, and I think I can kind of hear that all three of us are maybe on the same page, that there were ideas discussed that were definitely worth discussing. I really enjoyed that I went. It was thought-provoking, but I kind of just... I didn't leave thinking, whoa, it was just something kind of missing for me. And I felt like the characters were really interesting. I felt like I was watching a Wes Anderson film, like a lot of it, and these cool, kind of kooky characters. But then I felt irritated that it was like for me, that character that really irritated you, which I think the older woman. The older woman.
Yeah, the woman who'd gone from...
The older sister. Yeah, she had really irritated you, whereas she was my favourite every time she came on.
And it just shows you the theatre's perspective, isn't it?
I loved it.
So
but then
subjective.
The younger characters I found frustrating because they had these kooks about them, which I didn't see played up enough. You know, like the gymnast, but he just seemed like this regular guy.
He works out, we decided.
He was real buff.
Yeah. Who was that?
I leaned over to Georgia at one point and went, do you think he works out? I was trying to break the tension.
And he's like doing these like big lunges and stuff. And his arms are like the size of like barrels.
My thighs. Yeah. But overall, I'd like to see it again. I think that's the thing for me.
Wouldn't see it again.
I'd like to see it again just to see if I did miss something. And that's kind of where my mind...
You might see it differently the next time.
Yeah. And I think...
there'll be something you will have missed or...
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe there was something, some context I've dropped out. I think the story is really important.
I certainly think having at the base of a play or any piece of theatre or narrative, there's got to be some sort of message, some sort of point. And one of the things I liked about Finding Timurari is it was, at root, I think it was a story about the aftermath of colonialism and the relationship between the two characters, shadowed the relationship between the white colonial ex-masters of the mine and how they'd left this abandoned wasteland afterwards and took no responsibility for it. So I think... That message was clearly there, and the narrative of itself was great to watch, but the point was being made, and I think I know what the playwright was telling us.
Right.
But if you're not really sure the playwright's telling you anything, that is frustrating.
I mean, just hearing that kind of that theme, I feel like that can fit into the vultures as well.
Right.
And that it is almost like this is what's. I kind of thought it was like an apocalyptic future kind of thing. I didn't know if it was set in the present. And it, like an aftermath of this is the impact of colonisation. And
I think it was set in the 40s.
Because
of the costumes.
Yeah, we had that conversation.
The language is very contemporary.
So did you?
They were Snapchatting. They were Snapchatting.
Well, I will go see it if it goes to Tepe after listening to you talk.
I think it would be good.
I think
it would
be better at Tepe. I was also sitting way at the top at the back and I couldn't see anything.
And the gods.
And the gods.
That's one thing about Rangatira at the queue. Those funny balcony things.
Yeah.
Has anyone sat there and watched it?
I have a question.
Okay.
I have a question though, because I'm kind of.
You don't have to put your hand up because it's radio.
Yeah. I'm kind of thinking, okay, and like I wouldn't see it again, but I felt like I learned something. Like I felt like it was really interesting, that it was worth going, and some of the discussion points I found enriching. But is it a playwright's responsibility to make sure that there is like a strong point that the play's kind of focused around that you're then meant to leave kind of feeling like you know what the take-home message is. Is there meant to be, like, a strong take-home message? Because we're kind of discussing it and all three of us are kind of saying that there maybe really wasn't one.
Let's hear from the guests.
Well, I also just kind of wanted to say just before is that I think it's also important, or I feel inadequate kind of speaking about the show as a non-Māori when it's clearly a Māori writer writing a Māori story. So I think that needs to be acknowledged as context for all of this as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I think it's only their responsibility if they want that to be their responsibility. Yeah. You know, they may intentionally want you to go away to make up your own mind.
And having this discussion.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
I agree.
Yeah.
Just because you're not sure of it doesn't necessarily mean they missed something. You might have missed something and you need to see it two or three times.
And going off of that, I think it's what you bring in when you come to the theatre. If you're having a really, I don't know, terrible day and you're like really open and vulnerable, you might connect to just anything and everything. Yeah. Whereas if you kind of turned off and you're just like, meh, you just walk away and you're like, that didn't affect me because I didn't allow it to.
And not everything has to have a strong social point, does
it? No, I think that always affects how shows can be received, is how the audience comes into it. Because I've gone to shows actually feeling good and then gone out feeling better or worse, and I've come into shows feeling worse and come out better, and, you know, and it depends on what you're seeing and what happens. It's an interesting experience just analysing how you actually feel as a participant in the show.
Or where you are in life in general. You know, where you are, if you're going through something, you're going to connect more than other people.
Absolutely. Do you find in film, I mean, you must be exhausted with the emotional roller coasters. Some of the short film subjects are quite challenging.
Yeah, I mean, I think that too many stories have a social message that the story is too focused on, and actually the best stories have something like that as an underlying theme. And a well-known writer whose name escapes me at the moment once said that plot is the thing that you forget, but the theme is what stays with you. And that really resonated with me, because I think you have to take your audience on a journey somewhere, whether it's to discover something new or meet an interesting character or find something out, but you have to have that deeper thing there. But audiences are really turned off by anything that's too in your face. So if it's too overt, like I know I'm really repelled by short films that do that to you. I mean, the advantage of short films, though, is that you see a whole lot of them together, and so you can get taken on a whole lot of different journeys all at once, and so you can have a lot of different kind of emotional responses. And, if you don't get something out of one, there's another one coming along soon that might connect with you a bit more. So I guess it's not as risky as going to
a feature
film or a show that's quite long, and if you don't like it, then it's ruined your whole evening.
How do you keep, so you say, you know, one that's too in your face, you don't personally like. Do you have to take a step back as the artistic director of the festival, is the festival director, and go,
no,
what?
Shit, no, I have to take a step forward.
Okay. So explain that. So you get to choose. That's the great thing about your job.
Yeah.
You get to say, I like this one, I hate this one, I'm going to go with that one. Yeah?
But if I tried to be too, apathetic, or if I tried to distance myself from the storytelling, it wouldn't work, and I would end up choosing films for niches that I thought audiences might like instead of choosing ones that I personally found really powerful and moving or surprising, or that my team did as well.
If anyone on your team gone, Gina, that's a shit choice, I'm sorry.
Yeah, and I said, like, F you, like, this one's in. Well, often that means it's better, right? If you're arguing about it, if they think it's shit and I think it's awesome, then that's a sign that the audience is going to talk about it afterwards. And that's the best thing that can come out of theatre or film, I think.
I think any arts, isn't it? I mean, you look, people want to see people wander around the art gallery going, oh, that, I don't understand that drawing. I'm tilting my head like I'm looking at a painting. Just going to describe that narrative. Just tilting my head. And other people go, wow, that's the most amazing piece of art I've ever seen. Yeah. It's so subjective, isn't it? And that's the wonderful thing about art.
We come across that in music all the time, is the complexity of it, or the lack of complexity, if you want that to be the point. And, you know, we were actually talking about this in rehearsal for Love Me Tender today, about the choices of you know, chords and melodies, and that, for me as a composer, you prey upon the idea of suggestion rather than just giving it to the audience, because it's too easy to do that with music. You know, you find little stabs in the music that might suggest the idea of something. Maybe it's if the rhythm of an idea, you think, or even a melody. And it's the same if you're then obviously backing up with film or theatre. It has to support what you're seeing. But if you give it to them, that's what I love about the effect of music. You know.
Do you think often music ends up in films and television? Has music that does end up in film and television, has too much influence on the mood of how people think? Is that a loaded question?
Traditionally, the music is the mood of a film.
Absolutely.
That's what its job is in most films, is to tell the audience how to feel.
Yeah. But do you need to tell the audience how to feel?
You still have to provide the audience with some kind of clues and some shape to the story, and that's important. But I think you can be more interesting than that as well. Maybe you can do something in contrast to what you're seeing. Like, sometimes I think, you know, when you're dealing with a really difficult subject, something like really awful is happening to the characters, sometimes to make the film bearable or watchable, it either has to be shot beautifully or have amazing, beautiful music, and sometimes that's in contrast with what you're seeing, but that's what allows you to be able to witness something awful that's happening to the characters.
I find that with... I find that, it's you know, within a single thing, you say with awful instances, I find that with a lot of movies, when you get to like a death scene, which is often most movies and majority of movies, and I'm always curious how the way that gets scored, because you see somewhere it's a full-blown orchestral blowout and you think, okay, well, he's died and it's a big deal, but you know, you get that, but it's the subtle ones that sort of underpin it with just a tiny bit of accompaniment, or even just nothing at all, you know.
Like Quentin Tarantino.
That can be the most effective.
That's the most effective,
It actually goes back to what Gina was saying about the overall message of a piece of art. If it's too much in your face, if it's too obvious, it can actually be a turn-off. And I think a lot of music in modern television often is far too overbearing and manipulative. It's like
pointing.
Exactly. You must feel this. Exactly. Yeah.
Well, I don't know if anyone saw the spin-off edit of Winston Peters' announcement of the government, where they put it to reality television music.
Oh, no.
Because he talks a lot, because when he announced it, he says, we have decided that we will form a government with New Zealand First and the New Zealand Labour Party. Yeah. And it had all the music in
you
between.
You can see him snubbing out the tiki torches of the other political party, right? They cut to some cutaways of those candles being snubbed out.
Well, what they did, they cut to shots of people in America's Got Talent and X Factor standing on the sideline going, and mums looking at the children going, you're so clever. You know, it was really funny. But that music shows you how music can manipulate within film and TV and theatre to that extent. Because more so now, theatre's being used, more technology has been used in theatre, you know, multimedia projections and music and soundscapes, as opposed to, you know, maybe 20 years ago.
Absolutely.
It's become more of an integral part of it.
That's my favourite part of Pleasure Dome, actually, is
the
screens. The screens are awesome.
Still haven't seen that.
So good. I'm not going to say what happens, obviously.
No, I met another two people today who went along and said the first part of the show was brilliant in the area, but the actual show they were disappointed in the show itself. I had tickets to opening night and I got a migraine. I didn't get to go and see it.
You got a migraine not because of the show.
No, but I'm glad I didn't go with a migraine from what I heard. But I would like to see the show in the context of the environment.
Yeah, you have to have a couple of drinks first.
Right. Well, definitely have a couple of drinks.
Have you seen it?
We have.
Outing me again.
We got to see it, yeah.
What did you think of it?
Well, I'd heard really mixed reviews from fellow actors about it. Some people that just outrightly didn't like it, and obviously read Kate Pryor's review. And so I wasn't expecting a lot. And I was pleasantly surprised.
Oh, good.
Yes.
What are they going to do with
the opening number? Thought that was amazing.
What are they going to do with the venue afterwards? Do you know?
I think it probably goes back to Ash versus Evil Dead. Then
it's a film studio.
It's the actual film set. Yeah, which is amazing. That part of it's amazing.
Yeah, that part's really cool.
I always thought 10 years ago I wanted to set up a cafe in Auckland that was a streetscape with a park at the end of it. So rung out parents in the middle of winter when it's pouring with rain, can go and sit on the side of on the sidewalk and have a cup of coffee while their kids play in the park down the street. That would have been a great model. Anyone's got some money to invest, give me a call, kickarts1@gmail.com. Ask for Richard. So, and that's just a reminder that if you want to listen to the show, you can do that by going to planetaudio.org.nz and /kickarts, or you can go to kickarts.org.nz, and we've got a whole lot of archive shows right back to our first show in 2012. Yes, we've been going over 5 years, and there's been some really great shows and some really crap ones. So you can listen to them all. Most of the crap ones I wasn't involved with.
Don't look at me.
Oh, sorry. Sorry. Speaking of shows and not crap ones, we're talking about points of theatre. Does your play have a point? Does your show have a point?
Oh, you're looking at us.
Yeah,
oh, yes.
Absolutely. And I'm looking at you to help figure out what the point is.
I think so. I think it's a underlying one. It's not like splashed out in your face. So
no.
That's okay. I mean, it's light. It's a comedy. But there is an underlying, I think, theme of just we're using technology to see someone's surface level. You know, and how can you make a connection?
Absolutely. And you and the expectations of going and doing that for what that means these days and what you obviously get out of it for what people go and looking for. And I would say it's a nice sort of just reflective commentary on that social dating, you know, situation that we're facing now where, and it's not just Tinder, there's, you know,
Grindr.
Just, there's Grindr, there's even just simple Facebook, of course, there's Tagged, there's a bunch of other tons of those kind of apps, you know, for that kind of thing, and it's such a huge focus.
I arrange all my dates on Facebook. Hey, Georgia.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Kick-ass dates.
Kick-ass dates.
Yeah,
there
you go. Yeah, and so we don't, you know, I don't think you'll necessarily come away with a single, like, in-your-face pointed-out meaning, because it's more just a commentary on the people that you meet in these situations and the problems that ensue with that.
I think it's relatable. Yeah. I mean, I've kind of been out of the dating circuit for a while, so I don't have Tinder, to be honest. But I imagine, like, because there's, you know, there's a lot of the fourth wall going to the audience about how you feel in the moment of these dating situations. And so it's very relatable, like, oh, yeah, I've been in that situation. And, yeah, I think it's more about you take what you want from it. It's not like it's a big, you know, serious drama.
No, not at all. And it's not like a psychological profiling. It's just there to offer some lighthearted insight into the turmoil and rigmarole of dating in general, but obviously enhanced and fueled by Tinder.
Theatre can, and film and dance and music can just be about pure entertainment sometimes, can't it? Just to escape. God knows I've gone to some films I've wanted to escape from, but yeah, I have. Boxing Helena, worst ever film ever.
Oh, God.
Yeah. I went with a friend of mine, Lara, and I went to see that, it must be 20 years ago.
Yeah.
We went to the theatre and we couldn't stop laughing. It was
ridiculous.
On
there? Who was the actress who played
it? The blonde guy, the male guy who was the...
The one that did...
Was boxing her. Julian Sands.
Julian Sands, that's it, the Warlock. He was the Warlock?
Yes.
Warlock.
He must be the worst actor in the world. Has anyone seen?
No, I just... No.
Is it worse than The Room?
She was just kept in a box. But wasn't it just her head? It got to that point in the movie, but it was just her head left in a box.
I saw the description. Talking. Why would I want to watch this?
Well, we went along...
Even if it's made well, why would I want to watch
it? Yeah, it wasn't made well even. So there's a film people don't go and see. Actually, go and see it if you want a good laugh. Boxing Helena with Julian Sands. It's, one of the worst films I've ever seen in my life. And we stayed till the end because we just laughed.
You went to a movie and paid movie ticket prices to see that. I only watched it at home on VHS.
VHS. Goodness me. Yeah.
Wow. Yeah.
You should get yourself a DVD player.
Just shows how
old I'm Nicole. I know what you're saying.
It was 20 years ago, right?
Yeah, it was. It was at least 20 years ago, yes. And no, it was a terrible film.
So if people want to see something that they really will good. Like... Yeah.
Mm. Nice segue.
Show Me Shorts Film Festival starts this Saturday as a big opening night at the Civic, and we'll be playing all the award-winning films and announcing the award winners. So there are 10 different award categories, all four New Zealand films, apart from the Best International Film Award. So I'm really looking forward to kind of highlighting the work of all the top... upcoming filmmakers, and then the festival plays for a week at Rialto Newmarket,
as well as
cinemas across Auckland, like with the Vic in Devonport, Waiheke Island, Matakana, lots of places. So if people want to find out more about how they can go see those films, they should go to showmeshorts.co.nz.
And so opening night, anyone can go?
Anyone can go. Tickets on Ticketmaster.
And do you have an interval?
Yeah, we have an interval. There's only short films, so we do awards, and then we play the film, and then we award the next prize, and then we play the film. So it's really fun. Unlike most awards shows for like films, we just get to see like a couple of clips, and then it's all very nice seeing people get their awards, but it's not that much fun for the people who don't win the awards to come along.
So can you get up and go to the loo during the award giving?
Yeah, if you want. It's very informal.
Just asking. So,
yeah. It's at the Civic, which is beautiful, but we keep a real cash vibe. Yeah. Radar's the MC, so he tells jokes, keeps it light, the bar's open.
Then there's
an after party afterwards in the Winter Garden underneath, so everyone's invited to that. So there's a band that'll play. So it's
Rich
a good time.
Is so there. Look I'm at his there. Face. I wish that the listeners could see it.
I got an invitation.
Yeah.
I got an invitation.
I think your crest, your mohawk just went...
Yeah.
It fans out when I get excited.
It's like a little
lip
when you're feeling down, and then it
kind of
goes
red. Yeah, okay. Again, radio.
The other cool thing about the program this year is there's a whole selection of films from Quebec, Canada, and some of those filmmakers are coming over for the festival. So we're really excited to have that.
So how long is the viewing on Saturday? Is that every film that's going to be, every short film that's in the festival?
Just the award winners. There's 55 short films in the festival, so...
just
too many.
You'll be home by 3 o'clock in the
just
morning.
Just the award winners. So it starts at 8 and it should be done by 10:30, and then there's an after party. So it's a good Saturday night out. Tickets are $29, but that includes at the after party a glass of wine, and so it's kind of your whole night's entertainment. It's going to be a good time, and you get to meet a whole bunch of filmmakers and hang out with everyone. I know. Or you can ignore them, it's fine. Yeah.
There's a few filmmakers I'm not wanting to meet at the moment, I must say, around the world.
Are you going to add to that, or just say a really weird comment?
One in particular, producer.
Is
this a game?
So Monday. Yeah, I wouldn't mind meeting him. Some of those people need a good punch
slap
in the face.
I reckon so. So we're coming towards the end of the show, and I actually want to quickly ask you about your backgrounds and getting involved with the arts. Now, Nicole, I saw you in Nothing Trivial. It was great. I loved that show. It was a shame it didn't get reviewed for another season.
It
was really funny.
I don't get it. Yeah, although we did have a big campaign that
I know
some lady in Browns Bay started, and
they bought it. It wasn't you.
Where do you live? Nicole, where do you live? Do you live in Browns Bay?
No. I just live down the road. Yes. So, they had the big campaign, and we came back for the movie version, which wasn't really a movie.
I didn't see the movie.
2 hours. Didn't you?
No. I missed it.
I'm sure you can find it somewhere.
It's like the conclusion, because it never concluded for me.
It didn't, and neither did the movie, really. I think we always thought we were going to come back.
Yeah.
It was a bit of a shock for us all when we didn't.
Was it a fun experience? Because it was a fun show, fun cast.
Yeah, it was really fun.
Yeah.
It was really fun. Although I found out I was pregnant on the very last one. I was a bit grumpy. So I was kind of like...
As a character? Or for real?
No, yeah, for real.
Oh, gosh. Mm. Wow.
Yes, second time I've been on set and pregnant. And the first time was on Outrageous Fortune, but they wrote it in. Right. They wrote the character in. Yeah. And
was that? Were you doing long hours? Was it making you really tired?
I was pretty well looked after, but I had to do some pretty out there stuff like sex scenes when you're pregnant and pretending to smoke. Tammy Davis on top of you while you're pregnant, isn't?
Oh, no.
And my husband was actually, he was the prop standby.
Oh, God.
So he was the one that was standing right there Tammy's on top of me. I'm lying down. At this point, no one knew I was pregnant, except him and I, of course. He's, like, handing me the joint that we're meant to be sharing, and I'm, like, looking at him.
Like, oh, can you go and get me some porridge?
that's when your finest acting comes to.
Exactly. I can't believe I never won an award for that.
Yeah,
and that was fun. But actually, so...
And that's been kind of weird, having a sex scene with your husband, partner, standing.
Oh, he was just used to it. Yeah. He'd been on it. That's where I met him, on the show, so...
Oh, okay.
He'd seen me, naked, prancing around. This is a long time ago.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so this year, coming back to The Mountaintop, this is the play that has taken me out of a 17-year hiatus from the theatre.
Wow.
I read this play. Victor Rogers found this play under his FCC, which is... It's not a company yet. We're maybe looking at making it a company. It's a Pacifica Theatre Movement at this point, which takes on plays for public play readings of diverse works written by... has been mainly by African-American writers and read by Pacifica practitioners. And he asked me to read The Mountaintop, and it's a two-hander. And he said to me Dave Farney was going to be reading Martin Luther King. What did I think of that? And I've worked with Dave twice on Outrageous Fortune and The Strip. And I'd gone, this is really honest, but I'm sure Dave won't mind me saying this. I was like, really? Dave Farney? Martin Luther King? I don't know, man. You know? It's like, dude, funny guy, Dave. That's how we all see him.
Yeah.
Although Dave Dutt is a very skilled theatre practitioner and has a lot of very fine work behind him, which I didn't know about. And I remember the first reading that we did of it. He said the first line from the play... And my jaw just dropped. I just went, oh my God, what do we have here? It was incredible, and it still has been. So we've done two public play readings, which I can tell was just electric. The audience were like coming up to us afterwards going, you have to put this on, you have to put this on.
Wow.
And so we did. It was finding, we're putting this on as a co-op. So you can imagine for me, 17 years of not doing any theatre, and the first, I did streetcar specifically to learn under Shane Bosher and people like Mia Blake to get my stagecraft back on. But this is a co-op that we're doing. Julie's producing. It's just, I cannot even begin to explain to you how beautiful this play is.
So can I ask you, going back 17 years, getting involved in theatre in the first place, what drove you to get involved in this?
So I was at Unitech, I was a performing arts student, right. I was in the same class as Sarah Wiseman and another dear friend of mine, KK Moggy, who's New York based now. We're a very small class. So, and that is a theatre-based course, so all my training was in theatre. And I always loved theatre, and I always did theatre, but I just happened to get into
lots of TV.
Television and stay in it. And I think I got a little bit lazy, a little bit complacent, was working for SPP a lot, and kind of went, oh, this is kind of fun, you know, regular paycheck, which is unheard of in this country. You know, I did 6 seasons of Outrageous, and then I went on and did 4 seasons of Nothing Trivial. I mean...
That's 10 seasons.
Yeah. That's a lot.
That's a lot for a New Zealand actor.
Yeah. And I turned down a lot of theatre work. I think I was a bit scared, actually, to be really honest.
So this is exciting... new territory?
This is exciting new territory, but this is the play that I read that I went, we are going to put this on. This play needs to be seen. In saying that, there's been a really I know we're running out of time, but there's been a really interesting discussion about Pacifica actors taking on these roles, which is a whole other, you should have me back for that. And maybe Julie. And maybe Dave, and maybe Fussy should come along for that.
Yeah.
You know, we are...
But the playwrights...
the playwright has given us her blessing. Katori Hall has given us her blessing to do it. And trust me, she has pulled this play. A white actor played... They put a white actor in the role of Martin Luther King, and she pulled the play. She pulled the... She was so upset.
Oh, my... Really?
Yeah. And
so she will pull the rights if she didn't want us to do it. Like, we have her... Yeah.
So where did they do that?
They double-cast the role. They had a black actor playing, and the director was black. It was African-American. And he wanted to see how it would sit with...
White audience.
Oh, well, with a white... Yeah, how they would... With a white actor playing Martin Luther King, can the same words be... it was really... Anyway, she was furious, as you would be.
Wow.
So, yeah, we feel very blessed that she has given us a blessing to do this.
Cool.
And
it's on at the...
It's on at the basement.
It opens on Halloween, so the Tuesday, 31st of October until November the 11th, so plenty of chances to go and see it.
Apparently they're doing a ghost tour of the basement before our show. We may go through our dressing room, and then all those people can come see our show. So
nice.
Go to the ghost tour, then come see
us. They'll be feeling comfortable.
Also, special deal, buy 8 tickets shirts or more with the code Nice Cream and get a free Nice Cream.
So I just bought 8 tickets myself. I get eight Nice Creams to eat myself.
Yeah.
Sweet.
Georgia, maybe we could go along. We could buy 4 tickets each, get 4 ice creams and just...
And the tickets are discounted with that code, so...
I'm going to see this as a reviewer or a punter.
Yes, please do. Actually, we should,
So, Julie, you got involved with theatre how? I mean, we hear that you were a Green Party candidate.
Yes, also just that. But I think politics and activism and art is all the same thing. I took drama at school, so I've always been into this world. I studied film, so also kind of a wannabe filmmaker. But I did my... I was the producer in residence at Basement last year, so that was my main kind of thing that really launched me into theatre and just being immersed in theatre for a whole year. So, yeah, that program is so amazing, just getting paid full-time to learn about theatre. There needs to be more like that.
And yay, with the new government, they're bringing back apprenticeships, including theatre apprenticeships, arts apprenticeships. Yes, that is a great thing. Mm. So, and I've heard years ago that actors used to go to theatres and do apprenticeships and get paid for it, and that was kind of
I think that's something that Basement was going to do anyways, actually, is launch like an apprenticeship program similar to the producer program.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Great idea.
Very good.
Mm-hmm. Mercury Theatre and Theatre Corporate and all that took on young actors as apprentices, and they made coffee and painted the sets and listened to Raymond yell at them and then became actors. It was great. Excellent. So, Erin, your involvement with music? How did you get involved with music in 2 minutes or less?
Goes back as far as myself, nearly. My fifth birthday present was a keyboard for my parents, and lessons followed from that, and it was all that through school, high school, and then went to a composition degree at Auckland Uni for 4 years, and left with honours, and now I'm a freelance composer, basically, just doing work for musicals, theatre, shows like this.
How lucky are you that your parents identified a talent in you then? Was it a talent or an interest?
No, I wouldn't say a talent. It turned into one maybe from practice, as all arts do.
Are they musicians? Are they musical?
No. Music in my family goes a little way back, unfortunately. But I'm the only one to really have taken it this far since an uncle way, way back who was a leader of the Navy Band, I believe, for New Zealand. But anyway, just simply it was a thing to get me involved in when I was young, and I just ran with it for... up until now, since...
You know. Keep you off the streets.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And keep me off doing sports. So, you know.
You not like sports?
Sports doesn't like me.
Okay. Fair enough.
I like watching it enough, but... Yeah.
Yeah, me too. It's good to sit there and tell them what they should be doing properly when you've got no skill in the game yourself.
Exactly. You don't get that in music at all, do you?
No, you don't. Well, actually... but how many of us are critics? How many of us will sit there, listen to a gig going, God, that sounds shit. I could do a better job.
You're welcome to come along to Love Me Tender on the next Sunday week and tell me how it should have gone. But
Well, no, I may not. I may just sit there and go, wow, this is really cool. Not that I get Tinder, because I'm not of the Tinder generation. I was more of passing notes in class. So, you know, it's being... I pass the note left or I pass the note right. Is it going to work?
Yeah.
So. I'll tell you what, though, there's a lot of older guys on Tinder.
Are there?
Yeah, me and one of my friends, once we were waiting in a hospital waiting room, and thought that it would be funny to change the settings on our Tinders to just, like, as old as we could get it. And we thought it was really funny.
Is there an age limit on Tinder? We both kept having
these matches and getting all these messages in, and all of a sudden it wasn't funny anymore.
My creepy old guy. Harvey Weinstein.
Yeah.
H. Weinstein, H.P. Weinstein, H.P.W. Yeah, keep the same. Okay. Anyway, Jen.
Hi.
So, American?
Yes.
Sorry about the Harvey Weinstein and Donald Trump references.
That's okay.
Apologies. It's too late to apologise. So, in America, get involved with it?
From a very young age, I was singing and trying to act out scenes in my yard, play dress up, and my parents would take me to the opera or to musical theatre. And so, just did it all throughout elementary school, middle school, high school, went to university for it. It was something that I knew that this is it. So that's, and then I, when I was in Melbourne, I was doing professional theater there, doing cabarets or Peter Pan, or I did some other shows, more fringe festivals, international comedy festival. And then I came here and I only did one other show at the Basement and at Tapac for Matariki Festival. And so I haven't really done very much recently. So this is really good. It brings me back to why I love this.
How'd you end up in New Zealand?
Oh, that's a long story. I met my partner in Sweden. We both studied there, fell in love, went back to our countries, did long distance for a year and a bit. And then we met back in Melbourne. Didn't get the visa, so we came to New Zealand. okay. But hey, we love New Zealand. It's great. I think it's so safe.
Oh, your partner's not from New Zealand?
No, he's from France.
Oh, goodness.
I know. We have such a story. But yeah, so now we're here. And it's a great country. I feel like if you want to do something, you can do it. No one's stopping you, which is amazing. Especially for if you want to put something up in a theater, you can reach out to people. Whereas in the States, it's like, oh, I'm wasting my time. You know, like, because everyone does it. Whereas here, I think it's really special if you are in the arts, because it's not, I don't know. Not everyone's a singer or actor here.
So, well, we pretend we are. So, if you want to come and see you on stage, if you were going to book in to see you on stage, how would you do that?
Contact me.
For your show, I mean.
Oh, Love Me Tinder. Yes. Contact me privately. No,
PM me now.
That's a different show.
Is there another show we should know about?
We had last year, we did joke about setting up a thing through Tinder just to get attention.
Right.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Great idea.
Which we did for a little bit, but it got kind of, yeah.
I'm going to do that.
You should. But your date has to be coming and see me in the show.
No, you can.
Genius. Great marketing.
We open in a week. We open Sunday at Freedom Margolos, which is in Grey Lynn, and then the following week, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, sorry, which is the 2nd, 3rd, and 4th of November,
yes.
Sorry. God. We are at the Classic in town, but you can book tickets now at undertheradar.co.nz.
Yes.
At the Classic? What a great venue.
Yeah, it's going to be upstairs.
It'll be in the upstairs one. Because
in the dressing room?
Up that long flight of stairs and just into the top bar.
Isn't it called the loft? No. Classic
that's cute.
Loft.
No, it's
yeah.
cute.
Well, there's
yeah.
a classic upstairs.
But no.
Don't you just call it upstairs at the Classic?
Upstairs.
Yeah, that's what I believe.
So if they Google Love Me Tinder.
Love Me Tinder.
They'll get all the information there.
Absolutely.
Interval yes. or not? Interval or not?
No.
You don't need one.
You
the
don't
show
need
is
one.
So jam-packed,
it's that
you'll
so,
be busy
it's
laughing.
Great.
Okay. And what about you guys?
Yeah,
interval.
Yeah, we're currently running at an hour 30, and our director says we're going to get that down to an hour 10.
Yes.
So yeah. Wow, 20 minutes gone. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that cutting like 15 pages or just actually
pace? Lines.
Knowing your lines. Yeah. That's your pace, hey, when you get to that point where you just can't get over that hurdle because there's lines that just block.
Yeah.
Lines that just block.
Yeah, right. We've had that as well.
That's a wonderful process, though, isn't it? Wonderful process.
So you're trying to get to that 1940s snappy.
Yeah, ping pong.
Ping-pong.
That's right, exactly.
Auctioneer dialogue
keep
level
forward.
Of conversation,
And Gina, show me shorts. I'm just really looking forward to the opening night awards.
Yeah.
And being able to get up and go to the loo during the awards ceremony.
Totally.
And get the bars open.
Like.
We got told off. Went to a show recently and got told off for getting up and going to the bar, and it was a cabaret.
Oh, what? Screw that. Wow. That's bullshit.
German guy. I don't understand in this country it's okay for you to go and get things from the bar during my show.
He wasn't part of the performance.
He was the guy. He was the guy on stage.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did he say it while he was on stage?
Yes, and he stormed off at the end of the show. Because
wow.
someone else got up. So, and it's like, in New Zealand, is this what you do in cabaret? It's like, yeah. The bar's open. And
Yeah, absolutely. Come to Frida's next Sunday.
Yeah,
the bar's
you
open
can
beforehand.
Get as many drinks as you want.
Yeah.
Not that we're encouraging excessive use of alcohol, people.
Just like one.
Can I just say thank you so much to all our guests? Gina, thank you very much for coming in.
Pleasure.
Did we give you the right time? Or was it my fault? Probably not.
I think our publicist told me
8:30.
8:15 for 8:30.
Oh, yeah,
like
that's
later.
The old good. We're now at 8 o'clock, everyone, 8 o'clock here at Kick Arts. We've gone back half an hour. It's really good because that means I get tucked up in my bed by quarter to 10, which is really good because I'm getting old and tired. But Show Me Shorts, excellent. Looking forward to that festival. You can see it all around Auckland, Matakana as well, and Devonport. So keep an eye on for that. Just Google Show Me Shorts. The mountaintop. Stop it. Stop it.
Just I didn't think of say speech.
I didn't say treetop.
The mountaintop.
Yes. And I'm going to go home soon because I have a dream.
That was such a dad's joke.
I borrowed it off your dad. So good luck with that. Good luck with that. And yes. I'm sorry. Thank you very much for joining us here again at Kagarts. We've got to go. Gosh, it's been a great show. Great conversation. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
A little good luck to the new Minister of the Arts, Culture and Heritage, Jacinda Ardern. You'll do a fantastic job, I hope. And you with the Greens and with New Zealand First. I think, actually, hopefully we have some better arts policy. We support the arts. We support arts and education. We support the future of this country. And we support all those wonderful things that we're hoping for a change that we've got. Just a slight political bias sign off there from me, Richard. Thanks, Georgia. Thanks, Jay, for your review. We'll see you next week. We've got a great show. We've got Rari Paratini on next week talking about Te Pō. Yes, so we're looking forward to that. Go out there this week, guys. Have a good time and kick some arts. Kick on!